This reading for this evening for tonight's message will be out of Hebrews chapter 5, verses 1 through 4. For every high priest taken from among men is appointed for men and things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can have compassion on those who are ignorant and going astray, since he himself is also subject to weakness. Because of this, he is required, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer sacrifices for sins. And no man takes this honor to himself, but he who is called by God, just as Aaron was.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
It's good to see each and every one of you. We're always thankful for the opportunities that we have to assemble together and open up God's Word and study it, and certainly try to rightly divide it. So this month we're going to be looking at the book of Hebrews, and we're going to be in chapter 5. If you'll turn your Bibles over there, that's where we're going to spend almost all of our time this evening. And trying to give a little bit of a background on Hebrews without getting too extensive. But Hebrews, really when we look at it, when I think of it as a book, is Hebrews probably more than some of the other books in the New Testament really helps us with the understanding of the relationship of the Old Testament to the New Testament. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 15, it says, "Be diligent to present yourselves approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." And when we're rightly dividing the word of truth, one of the first things that comes to my mind is dividing the Old and the New Testament. Is understanding the Old Testament and its purpose, understanding the New Testament, understanding the connections between the two, and certainly we won't get to all those connections, certainly not. But the Old Testament was a tutor, it was a teacher, and really it was leading us to Jesus Christ, and so many powerful lessons that we can learn from the Old Testament. Romans chapter 15 and verse 4 says, "Whatever things were written before, written for our learning." So certainly there's a lot of good from the Old Testament, but we're not under the Old Testament anymore. And really, Hebrews is important because it's really written to Jewish Christians. These individuals were Jews, probably practiced Judaism. In fact, in Hebrews, it mentions sacrifices happening, which kind of lends me to believe that it was before AD 70, because we understand that in AD 70, the temple was going to be destroyed. So when it references sacrifices and things, it makes you think that perhaps this is before that time. But we've got these Jews that were Jews for a period of their life. Now they're Christians. And as we see throughout the New Testament, a lot of the Jewish Christians have a hard time with leaving a lot of the Old Testament behind. In fact, we see in Acts where they say, "You have to be circumcised to be saved." They really are struggling with leaving some of that Old Testament in the past. And really, Hebrews, as we read it, it is really making a powerful argument that the gospel, Jesus Christ, and all the things that he offers is really better than the Old Testament. It is better. And that is actually a key word that you're going to find. Now, it's not that the Old Testament didn't serve its purpose. It did. In fact, Jesus did not come to destroy the law, but to fulfill. And he did. He fulfilled a lot of those types, and he being the Antichrist, he fulfilled all the prophecies, and he fulfilled all these shadows pointing to Jesus. But we have, when we're looking at the book of Hebrews, is we have some Jewish Christians, and they really want to go back. They want to go back to the old law. They want to go back to some of the old ways. And really, Hebrews, in many ways, is a plea to those individuals to say, don't go back, because what we really have is so much better. And there's a lot of things that we can talk about. But one of the things that is really emphasized in chapter 5 is really we have a better high priest. If we recall some of the Old Testament, we take the Old Testament, we understand that the law was given Mount Sinai, and we have the Ten Commandments, and when you violated the Ten Commandments, certainly there was punishment that went along with those, but then just in general, there were sacrifices. And who would offer the sacrifices? The priest. And certainly we think of the high priest. And that individual was really involved in the sin process and trying to help with that. And what we have in chapter 5 is it's going to lay out some of the qualifications for the Jewish high priest. And what we're going to see is there's going to be a pointing out that Jesus really meets a lot of these qualifications. Now, does Jesus meet all the qualifications of the Old Testament Levitical high priest? No, Jesus does not. But he meets some key ones, and I think that that is a reference. I think the Jews struggled with a lot of things, and perhaps one thing they struggled with was their mediator, if you let it be that way, the mediator they could see. They could see the high priest. They could see the high priest making sacrifices. But as we continue on, we think that Jesus is our high priest. Do we get to see Jesus? Do we actually get to physically see the sacrifice? We know the sacrifice that he made on the cross, but do we get to physically see those things? A lot of the Old Testament we see is very physical in nature. We have the dress of the high priest. We see the actual ceremony. We see a lot of that physical, and I think that Jews struggle with a lot of those things. And we see that throughout the New Testament. But talking about the high priest, it's really going to lay out an argument that Jesus really meets some of the qualifications of the Levitical high priesthood, but also really saying that he is much better. And there are five things that I actually think are hit on in chapter 5, verses 1 through 4, that Jesus meets. So they're trying to go back to the Old Testament. They're going to go back to the Old Testament ways. They're going to pick up some priests. And the argument, I think, is why would you go back when we already have an excellent high priest in Jesus Christ? Let's look at those first four verses, and let's start picking up on some of the things that Jesus is going to meet in these respects. Verse 1, we're going to see that the priests of the Old Testament, they had to be taken among men. And you're also going to see that the priest must offer something. And you're going to see that the priest must be acquainted with the infirmities of men. We're going to see that the priest needs to serve God on the behalf of men, and we're going to see that the priest has to be appointed by God. All of these, Jesus meets. Let's look at verse 1 really quickly. It says, "For every high priest taken from among men is appointed for men in things pertaining to God." So we understand that this is really written to those Jewish Christians that are trying to go back to the Old Testament. And this is the first four verses is really going to be talking about the Old Testament. The next few verses are going to be talking about Jesus. But it says, "For every high priest taken among men is appointed for men and things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sin." It says, every high priest is taken from among men. Now, when we think of that, was Jesus taken from among men? Well, we think of John chapter 1 and verse 14. It says, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, and the glory as the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth." We think of 1 John chapter 4 and verse 2. It says, "By this you know the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses that Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is of God." Certainly we understand that Jesus is a special case. He is God and man in one, but he was man. He was flesh. And he was selected from men to be a priest in many respects, that he is going to be our mediator, and that Jesus is really going to help with some of the sin problem. He's going to solve the sin problem that's really been there since Adam and Eve, as we go back. But appointed for men is that the high priest was needed. The priest was needed in the Old Testament to make sacrifices on the behalf of individuals that had broken the law, had sinned. And underneath the New Testament, we certainly need our sins forgiven, and we have Jesus Christ and his blood offered as a sacrifice. So you think of that, I think that Jesus, as we look at verse 5 is going to start talking about Christ. It says, "Though also Christ did not glorify himself to become high priest, but it was he who said to him, 'You are my son today, I have begotten you,' as he also says in another place, 'You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek.'" We do think of Jesus, and I think he was taken among men. Number 2 is a priest has to have something to offer. Underneath the Old Testament, what would the priest offer? Well, there's two primary sacrifices that we deal with in the Old Testament. There's free will offerings, and then there's the more sacrifice offerings that we remember, the sacrifices for sin. You know, I thought about that a lot. I'm not saying that I'm perfect and I understand everything in relation to this, but I did think about that a lot. In the Old Testament, you had free will offerings, and you really had the blood sacrifice offerings. And I think about Jesus Christ. What did he offer on our behalf? The priests of the Old Testament would take these animals. They would also, there was the free will offerings as well, and these would be offered. But what did Jesus offer? And I thought about that a lot. Is didn't Jesus kind of do both? And didn't Jesus do kind of a free will offering? And not only did he do a free will offering, he did the blood offering. Well, how did he do the blood offering? It was himself. He was the sacrifice for sin of all time. So you think about the Old Testament priests. They were chosen among men. They were men. Jesus was chosen among men. Another thing to think about is that the priest had something to offer. And you see that in chapter 5 and verse 1. It says, "For every high priest taken among men is appointed for men and things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sin." Now I think of Jesus Christ. Did he offer gifts and sacrifices for sins? Yes, he did. And we're starting to see this comparison. Why would you want to go back to the Old Testament and pick up the priesthood when we already have Jesus, and look at, he was taken among men. Not only look, he was taken among men, but look what Jesus offered. And actually, you see that throughout Hebrews, is that's going to be brought up. It's a sacrifice. We have a better sacrifice than those of the Old Testament. You know, I do think of that Jesus Christ and his sacrifice. We think of that idea of a free will offering. Of course, one of the passages that we know very well, John chapter 3 and verse 16, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son." You think about that, a free will offering. And not only that, we understand Jesus being the Son of God, when he's going through the sacrifice, he could have called it off. And he could have called the angels and said, "I'm done. I don't want to go through this." But Jesus, he offers himself. A free will offering, but also a blood offering at the same time, as I think about it. And we understand how important that is, because in Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 12, if memory serves, Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 12, it says, "Not with the blood of goats and calves, but with his own blood, he entered the most holy place once for all." And Jesus, look what he had to offer. He offered himself. And in many senses, it was a free will offering, and it was also that blood offering. We understand that the sacrifices offered in the Old Testament, they were just insufficient to the task. Insufficient to the task of taking away sin. Now, we understand that those individuals are doing what God told them to, but Jesus' blood really flows backwards to cover those. So we think of being chosen from among men. Jesus, I believe, meets that. Number two is, does Jesus have something to offer? Yes, he does. He offers himself and free will. Let's look at verse 2, chapter 5, verse 2. It says, "He can have compassion on those who are ignorant and going astray, since he himself is also subject to weakness." Now, this is talking about the Old Testament priest. Were the Old Testament priests subject to sin and weakness and temptation just like the people? Yes, they were. And in fact, in Leviticus chapter 4, verses 3 through 12, it actually talks about the priests having to offer sacrifices for themselves to make sure that they were pure. You think about the Day of Atonement. They offered for themselves first before they offered sacrifices for others. Is the priest would have to say, "You know what, I've sinned, I've made mistakes," and the priest would have to go, and they would have to make a sacrifice for themselves before they could make sacrifices for others. Now we think about Jesus. Is Jesus acquainted with the infirmities of men? Is he acquainted with the mistakes and the temptations of men? I believe he is. Go down to chapter 5 and verse 7. Chapter 5 and verse 7, this is talking, the first four verses are really talking about the Old Testament priest, and then the following verses are really talking about Jesus. It says, verse 7, chapter 5, it says, "Who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with vehement cries and tears to him, who was able to save him from death, and was heard because of his godly fear." Jesus Christ, when he came to this world, he went through all the temptations and trials that we face. Now, he did not fall to a single one. He did not fall at any of the temptations, but he went through these things. And in many senses, how relatable does that make Jesus? Jesus came to this world, and he suffered by obeying God. And many of us, as we serve God, we are going to suffer for serving God and being obedient. As the world comes after us, as society comes after us, we'll suffer for being obedient to God. Jesus suffered for being obedient to God, and also we understand that he did not sin in the process. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16, it talks about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life. All these are thrown at Jesus. We think about before his ministry, when he goes out into the wilderness and Satan comes to him, and he tempts him, and he throws all those different temptations at him over and over again in Matthew chapter 4. And we think of Jesus' journey to the cross. We do think of his prayers. We do think of his supplications. We do think of his pride. We do think him reaching out to God and saying, will this cup pass from it? And he says, not as I will, but as you will. Jesus is relatable. He went through the trials of this life, and certainly, going through these trials, we think about it, it says, he can have compassion on those who are ignorant and going astray. Jesus has compassion on those that are ignorant and going astray. And in fact, when we think about it, Jesus had compassion on us when we were still sinners. Romans chapter 5 and verse 8. While we're still sinners, Christ died for us. Certainly, God is acquainted, Jesus is acquainted with the infirmities of men. And I think we see that. Chapter 5 and verse 3. It says, because of this, he is required, as for the people, so also for himself to offer sacrifices for sin. Now, certainly this is talking about the priests of the Old Testament. But we think about that idea is the idea of serving others. And I think in the verses leading up to this, don't we see the idea of the priest serves others? It says, for the high priest was taken from men and is appointed for men pertaining to God. Is that the priest really was serving men? And when we think about our high priest, Jesus Christ serves men, and he serves us. Look at verses 7 and 8 below. It says, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplication with vehement cries and tears to him, who was able to save him from death, and was heard because of his godly fear, though he was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. You think about all that Jesus went through. Who was it for? All the things that Jesus went through, from the beginning of his life to the end, why did he go through all of it? Why did he leave heaven, an excellent situation, a fine situation, why did he leave heaven to come here to serve, to offer him a sacrifice for us? See, the high priest of the Old Testament, certainly they served man as best they could. Jesus served us the best he could, and certainly when we think about his sacrifice, we think about all that he did, how much he did on our behalf. You know, you start to look at this, and you start to think about Jesus' obedience. In verse 8, chapter 5, verse 8, it says, though he was a son, yet he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. I don't think there is ever really a question that Jesus wasn't going to be obedient, but I think there's an idea there that Jesus was going to suffer for doing that which is good. Jesus was going to suffer on man's behalf for doing that which is good. And I think if we live the Christian life the right way, we will go through that same transition ourselves, is that we will suffer for doing good. I think in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12, it says, those who desire to live godly will suffer persecution. If we try to live the Christian life, try to live it the right way, just like our high priest suffered by serving and being obedient, we will suffer for serving and being obedient. And you know what? We're all going to suffer in this life. I don't think there's a question about that. We're all going to suffer in this life. The question is will you suffer for doing good? Will you suffer trying to serve? Will you suffer giving your best? Will you suffer doing the Lord's will? You're going to suffer regardless. But if you're going to suffer, suffer for doing that which is good. In 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 13, it talks about that subject. And it says, and who is he who will harm you if you become followers of what is good? But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. And do not be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled. You know, there's an interesting thing there, is if a Christian is living a good life, I think it does help us in a lot of situations. I've worked with a lot of people that are against God, that are against God's ways, that in many ways are against me. But because I live my life in a godly way, I think it helps to smooth over some of the relationships. They're like, you know what, I don't like Kyle's beliefs about this, but you know what, he's a hard worker. You know, I don't really like what Kyle says about this, but you know what, he always shows up and he does what he should. And you know what, he's not lying, he's not cheating, he's not stealing. I think living a good life is going to help us. And I think it will protect us in some way. But it says, but even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. It goes down, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 17. It says, for it is better to suffer for doing good, if that should be God's will, than for doing evil. We think about Jesus. He was obedient. He listened to the Father in heaven. He did what he said. And by doing what God told him to do, he suffered. And why did he suffer? Why did he go through it all? He went through all of it to serve. And the high priests of the Old Testament were serving men, and certainly Jesus Christ did that, and we can see that his service led to suffering on our behalf. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 8, it says, "And being found in the appearance of man, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even the death of the cross." We think of Jesus' obedience. Obedience is a word that almost the religious world has thrown away. It's almost a word they cast away. You know, you don't need to be obedient. You don't need to do what God says. You don't need to worry about what God says. But when we look at Jesus and his example, how obedient was he? He went through the ringer. He went through all the pain. He went through all the suffering. He went through the beatings. He went through the verbal attacks. He went through the thorns on his hair. He went through being whipped. He went through all that suffering. He was obedient to what point? In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 8, it says he was obedient to the point of death. What a high priest he served. We can think of the high priest of the Old Testament. We think of Jesus, his obedience, his service to man, his suffering that he endured on our behalf. What a high priest that we have. You know, we certainly have all have temptations and things that we struggle with. And certainly we discipline ourselves. We try to bring ourselves under self-control to do those things that are good and right. But that was one of the amazing things about Jesus, our high priest, is he always did that which was right. In John chapter 8, verse 29, it says, "And he who sent me is with me. The Father has not left me alone, for I always do those things that please him." I always do those things that please him. Chapter 5 and verse 4. Chapter 5, verse 4, it says, "No man takes this honor to himself, but he who is called by God, just as Aaron was." If you were a priest in the Old Testament, could you just wake up one day and say, "I want to be a priest"? No. Underneath the Old Testament, you had to be from the tribe of Levi. And really, if you think about that, chapter 5 and verse 4, it says, "No man takes honor to himself, but he who is called by God." You could not just wake up one day and say you're going to be a priest. And Jesus, when we think about him, he had to be selected by God. Aaron, we see that Aaron was called in Exodus chapter 28, verse 1, Leviticus chapter 8, verse 2. But we see that Jesus was selected by God. And really, that argument starts for Christ in verses 5 and 6. It says, "You are my son, today I have begotten you." And he also says in another place, "You are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek." Jesus did not necessarily meet all the requirements of the Levitical priest. I mean, we think of the tribe that Jesus came from. He came from the tribe of Judah. So he doesn't necessarily meet all the requirements. But when you start putting them side by side, and you start saying, well, these are certain things that the priest of the Old Testament has to have, and here are certain things that our high priest has, when you start comparing them, you start to realize that Jesus, yeah, he came from among men, but he also was the Son of God. And then you start to think of these other things. The priests of the Old Testament, they made offerings, but what did Jesus Christ offer? He offered his blood, and he offered it as a free will offering for all. We start to think about their obedience and their service to man. We think about what the high priest did, not trying to down, but we think Jesus is a better high priest. He served, he suffered, he obeyed in a perfect way. And certainly when we think in the order of Melchizedek, we don't have time to get into that this evening, but Melchizedek we know was a priest and a king. And certainly that is Jesus Christ, a priest and a king. And certainly that's very significant because to be a king, you have to have a kingdom. To be a king, you have to have a kingdom. And I think that Jesus did establish his kingdom, which is the church. And I think that would put a lot of people in a hard spot in the denominational world as they try to say that perhaps there is a kingdom coming that is down the road. Well, Jesus is a priest in the order of Melchizedek. He is a priest and a king. And I think that is very significant. And I believe that Jesus does reign. And in order to reign, he does need a kingdom. You know, we read chapter 5, we see these characteristics, these things laid out of the Old Testament priest, and then we start to think about Jesus Christ as our high priest. And at the end of chapter 4, it talks about some of those beautiful things in relation to Jesus Christ. Chapter 4, verses 14 and following, says, "Seeing then that we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. Let us hold fast our confession, for we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. but was in all points tempted as we were, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly to the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace and help in the time of need. When you had a sin problem, when you had a sin issue in the Old Testament, you went to the priest. When we have a sin problem in relation to the New Testament, who do we have to go to? We have to go to Jesus. And we have to do what he says. And certainly we can see that in the New Testament. But the argument that's being made, and this is not the only argument made in Hebrews, a better high priest, a better sacrifice, I mean, it really goes long, on and on and on, all the things that are better. But if it's better, why would you go back? If Jesus is a better high priest, why would you go back? And I know that this is not perhaps a major problem in the United States, and some degree I guess it is, because a lot of times what do people try to do? They'll try to go back to the Old Testament to justify their practices. They'll say, you know what, I want to live the Christian life, I want to be under Jesus as high priest, but I'm going to go back and I'm going to cherry pick from the Old Testament and find what I want and apply it to today. Sometimes people do that. Sometimes people, I would suggest, do something far worse. Is instead of going to Jesus as their high priest and saying, you know, Jesus, what he says goes. Whatever Jesus says in the New Testament, I am going to do and I'm going to submit to because he's my high priest. You know what people will do? They'll go to men. They'll go to men sometimes. Why would you go to something that's lesser? Why would you run away from Jesus Christ? Why would you run away from the high priest? You know, I like what Peter says in John chapter 6 and verse 68. It says, but Simon Peter answered and said, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. Who are you going to go to? You know, this situation, you know, as we rewind in time, these Jewish Christians are saying, you know what, maybe we should dabble, or maybe we should go back to the Old Testament. Why would you go back? Why in the religious world are we trying to find another high priest? Why are we trying to cut out Jesus and say, you know what, I'm going to listen to this pastor, I'm going to listen to this person, I'm going to listen to this person. The only person we should listen to is Jesus Christ. He is the high priest that is going to offer sacrifices on our behalf. Why am I trying to run to somebody else? I need to go right to Jesus and make sure that I'm doing that which he says. We can't go anywhere else. In Acts chapter 4 and verse 12 it says, nor is there salvation in any other, for there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. There's many individuals that are run somewhere else besides the high priest they should be, which is Jesus Christ. We certainly see the pattern. One of the last things Jesus said, he died for individual sins. He rose again. And one of the last things he said before he ascended to heaven, he says, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. Mark chapter 16, verses 15 and 16. And we see his followers carry this out. If Jesus says, go into all the world and preach the gospel, he who believes and is baptized shall be saved. And in Acts chapter 2, we see that his followers start preaching and they start teaching. And in Acts chapter 2, those individuals are cut to the heart and they say, men and brethren, what shall we do? In Acts chapter 2, verse 38, he tells them, Peter says on that day, repent, be baptized, every one of you, for the remission of sins. You've got to go to Jesus. You can't go anywhere else. And certainly all we want to do is follow the Bible. And if we get off that, we understand there's nothing better to go to. We can't go to the Old Testament. We can't go to man. We can't go to the world. We've got to go to the book and what it says. And if we can't back it up with that, we're certainly in trouble because we're leaving the high priest. Perhaps you need to become a New Testament Christian this evening. Perhaps you need the prayers of the church. We'd love to help you in any way that we can this evening if you come as we stand and as we stand.